Yes, welcome back to the show here on Monday's edition of World Football Daily. It's always good to kick the week off with an extra special guest, and I'm delighted to say that we have one of those right here, right now, today on the show, talking all things Premier League action from the weekend. Mr. Steve Tongue of The Independent joining us. Steve, how are you, mate? It's a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Very well, thank you. Very well. And London is just about warming up a little bit, though not a lot.
So there's no sunbathing yet in the afternoon on your days off just yet, then?
There certainly is not, no.
A side that will be not wanting to relax and slow down at all at the moment will be Aston Villa, along with Queen's Park Rangers and Reading and Wigan in the battle for Premier League survival. Wigan starting to find the form at the right time. What do you put down these late season revivals that Wigan seem to be able to pull off, and can it happen again this year?
Well, first answer, I think he's probably experienced the experience of the players and the manager. They haven't changed the side a lot. Roberto Martinez, who's been through a few of these himself, knows what it takes, and he seems to get them going at the right time of season. They often have a bad time before Christmas, and you think, finally, this is the year in which they're going to be caught out. This is the one in which it's going to happen. But yet again, they seem to be reviving at the right time, although there still isn't a lot in it. Funny enough, I think they might have started a bit better than usual this time. They had their little slump round about Christmas time when they lost several games and then just into the new year. And of course, they're by no means out of trouble. I think you've nailed the four teams there: QPR, Reading, Aston Villa and Wigan. And Southampton, who are only three further points ahead of Wigan, won't feel they're safe yet, especially with a big game against QPR coming up next. If they do win that, as they probably ought to on current form, then they'll be looking much better placed. But no, I think Wigan and Aston Villa and Reading are really looking at two places. I'm not sure that QPR are going to get out of it, having seen them lose at home to Man United on Saturday. Harry Redknapp standing optimistic, as he has to, of course. He keeps making the comparison with the Portsmouth team he had in 2006. I won't repeat the word he said about how bad they were, but he thought they were a poor team, shall we say, and they managed to get 20 points from the last 10 games. This is going to be Harry's big mantra for QPR over the next few games. But at QPR, if they got those 20 points, that would take them up to 37, and of course couldn't guarantee being safe with that. But on their present form and the way they're struggling, and especially the way they're struggling for goals, you would say that QPR are going to find it very hard indeed to get 20 points from the last 10 or even 11 games. So what I'm saying in a nutshell is that I think they're going to go, and that, as you say, Reading, Villa and Wigan, with the possible Southampton as well, are going to be very much remaining in trouble for most of the rest of the season.
When you say Wigan haven't changed the side up too much, do you mean that they haven't brought in many players and let many people leave? Or do you mean as in on a rotation, there's not much squad rotation in that side?
Well, a little bit of each, actually, because it isn't a big squad, and so they don't tend to make a lot of changes, and they seem to have stuck to a more regular, interesting player who was once, of course, at Chelsea, where he had great prospects, which didn't really materialise, but now he seems to be a regular and he's at least scoring a few more goals. His problem was they just couldn't score. And the only really big ones they brought in the summer were Kone, who got the important goals at the weekend, but he was only 2 or 3 million from Levante, and Ramis from Mallorca, about 4 million. Other than that, as I say, it's a settled squad who've been there before, especially the defensive side and the people at the back. And Martinez, above all, who has this wonderful calmness, as you probably know. He doesn't really get excited on or off the pitch. You can imagine him being a very calming influence in the dressing room, the training ground and around the place. Mm. And that I think that belief really counts for quite a lot. The fact that they will trust in him, they will know that he knows what it takes to get out. But having said all that, I do still think it's going to be very difficult for them. The surprise to me, and I suspect most people, is that Villa are still down there. And the particular surprise is the lack of goals they get. I mean, 26 goals from their 27 games is, I think, the lowest of all those teams in trouble apart from QPR. When I look at a relegation fight, I always look at the teams who are most likely to score and the players, just the one or two players who might get the goals for them. And when you look at Villa and Benteke, the way he's been playing, Wijnman has come in and got the goal at Arsenal at the weekend and has looked quite good. And of course, Darren Bent is still there when a lot of people thought he might actually go in January. And you just feel that there are more goals in Villa than most of the other strugglers, which is one reason I still think they probably will get out.
Do you think Lambert should start maybe rotating in more players? Because there's plenty of options that they have in terms of Albrighton, who's reasonably experienced as a Premier League footballer. Stephen Ireland's still there and not playing very often. Bent's still in there as well. There's some experience on that bench that isn't getting any game time at Villa. Is that going to be useful and be needed in these final few games of the season?
Yes, I'm surprised about Albrighton because he's often looked a very promising player indeed. He's appeared at England under 21 level and looked very decent. What they have got away from a little bit is that he has gradually moved out one or two of the younger players and brought back a little bit more of experience from time to time. He's also been boosted by Charles Nzogbia finding some form again. A game I saw a while ago at West Brom when they led 2-0 and looked very good indeed. But then allowed West Brom to come back and draw with them, which might have been part of the problem. But that was the day when the local people said that Nzogbia had really produced a proper performance, the sort of performance of which he was capable, and they were hoping for better things from him. He seems to have been playing quite well. But yes, Ireland, as you say, can't seem to nail down a place. Some of the younger players still seem to get picked ahead of him. Richard Dunn, they were hoping would come back because they do need a bit more experience and solidity in defence. But as you say, the squad is there. Probably better than almost all the others down there, if not all of them.
Maybe a side that is better than those squads is Queen's Park Rangers when you look at the amount of money they've spent and some of the players that they've been able to bring in, but it's not clicking and they were thumped by Manchester United in what you could describe as being that typical title-winning style of a win there, Steve.
Yes, very much so. United weren't at their best, which they put down partly to the fact that it's not a very good pitch at Loftus Road, as even Harry Redknapp agrees. He says that's shaping Rangers' tactics in that really their idea is just, he admitted, to get the ball up to Bobby Zamora, who's very good at holding it up, and then try to join in with him. Not particularly the way that Redknapp likes to play, but needs must in this situation. United, as you say, did what they had to do. They would have liked to have got that second goal a lot earlier, I'm sure, because while it was still 1-0, there was the odd chance that something might go wrong. Rangers produced about one chance from Remy that De Gea, I think, made his only save of the whole afternoon. And then Ryan Giggs, as you know, got away for that fine goal which tied it up. So United did enough. And, of course, it made the lead 15 points, which was huge, before City managed to cut it back to 12. But 12 still looks a very big lead with only 11 games to play.
Yeah, United don't look like slipping up, and reassuring that Van Persie's injury that he picked up falling on a camera isn't going to hold him back too much, and he should be ready for Real Madrid in a week or so's time.
Yes, I was astonished that Ferguson didn't make more fuss about that, because I don't know how much of the pictures you've seen, but it really is very odd to have both a cameraman and this sort of pit, like the dugout, so close to the actual pitch. And what happened, for people who didn't know, was that Van Persie, when he went to the byline, got a shot in and his momentum took him over the byline, as it often does with players, and he just crashed into this camera and the cameraman and the pit, and was probably lucky to get away with the injury he did, which was a sore hip. He had to come off after. He did carry on for about another 15 minutes, then had to come off. And United really were playing the whole thing down and saying it'll be a bit sore. I suspect they won't be too worried if he misses Saturday's game, which is at home to Norwich, where they ought to be able to do without him. But, of course, they have to have him for Real Madrid. But, as I say, the fact that the manager didn't make more fuss about it, I suspect means that it may not be all that serious and that he should be all right. They really won't need to risk him on Saturday and can hold him back for Real Madrid.
Are you advocating then the removal of cameras from around the pitch, Steve, to prevent these sorts of injuries, you know?
Well, it struck me just sitting there looking at it. I thought, are there really any other grounds where there are an actual pit, a sort of a hole, a dugout, so close to the pitch? And I can't think of any. What I've read subsequently is that a lot of places there are, and this makes sense, there are actual advertising hoardings between the players and the cameramen. So that this is not a sort of moving cameraman who can really get out of the way. This is almost a sort of fixed camera point. So that we do, you'll often see players, you know, they do crash into the advertising hoardings, don't they? But it's rare to sustain a serious injury like that, partly because the there's a bit of flexibility, I think, in the actual hoardings. But Rangers, it did strike me as very unusual in that respect, and I wonder if they might actually need to do something about it.
A secret weapon in their fight against relegation, maybe, Steve, as well. Who knows what Harry Redknapp's trying to use to get Rangers out of that hole. For Manchester City on Sunday, did you get the feeling it was one of those frustrating performances in that where have these second half sort of performances been all season for City? Because it was a little drab at first to start, and then they kicked into life in that second half, led by Yaya Toure.
Well, it was a second 45 minutes in which they began to look a little more like champions, or a little more like, not this season, but the champions of last season. When you see Aguero and Silva and Toure and Tevez putting himself about a bit, you think this is still a very good team with a lot of talent in it. That's what must have made it particularly frustrating for their supporters, I would think. I did see them in the abysmal game at Southampton, a couple of weeks ago, when they were beaten and looked so poor. And of course, significant perhaps that a couple of weeks before that, they'd gone to Queen's Park Rangers and only managed a goalless draw, when United went and won comfortably in the end. And that almost summed up the difference between them this season as well. But no, you're right that for the second half, indeed, they looked a very good team again, and a team who really shouldn't be 12 points behind United.
Do you get the feeling, even though there was that problem with the Southampton game and the two disastrous goals they conceded there and the two draws before that against Liverpool and against Rangers, as you say, do you get the feeling, though, that since Mario Balotelli left the club, there is less of an edge surrounding it so much?
Might be. I don't know that we can pin it all on him, but they've certainly, you know, they've done what they had to do since then. Very easy cup win over Leeds, who were outclassed, basically, as they admitted. And then, you know, it was a big result against Chelsea, because if Chelsea had gone there and won the game, which at one stage early on, of course, looked quite possible when they got the penalty and so on, you know, we'd have been looking at a much tighter gap. And that would certainly, I think, have interested Tottenham and Arsenal particularly, because we've heard Arsene Wenger, I think, saying he can still finish second, which I think is a bit optimistic now. To be fair, I think he probably said that before the City-Chelsea game, when they might have been hoping for a Chelsea win to sort of peg City back. But you're now looking at City 56 points, Arsenal only 47. I think that's a very big ask from Arsene, really.
Steve, you've got three sides there battling for the remaining two Champions League spots then, after Manchester United and Manchester City. Which two of those three do you think takes them? Is it this Chelsea and Tottenham sides that are there in third and fourth at the moment?
Well, it's the three London teams, isn't it, as you say, which makes it all the more interesting and will certainly make all the remaining London derbies for the season particularly keenly contested. Tottenham Arsenal next Sunday, of course, is going to be a very big game indeed. With Arsenal in fifth place at the moment, they are, of course, the five teams, the two Manchester and the three London teams, who just about everybody thought would be the top five this season, which is, I suppose, a little bit disappointing in a way that we really knew all the teams who were going to be up there. Not a great surprise, perhaps, that Manchester have come out with the top two. But, well, Chelsea, Tottenham, Arsenal, you could almost take your pick. What's happened time and time again, of course, is that Tottenham and Arsenal have been vying for that fourth place. Normally, Arsenal have got it in the past. Then the one occasion when Tottenham did, they were squeezed out of Europe by Chelsea. But Arsenal have always managed to finish above them, of course, recently. It's very, very tight, isn't it? You would have to say that Arsenal still look fallible. I mean, you know, they got the win against Aston Villa with a very late goal. Villa, we're talking, as we've said, about relegation contenders who were 5 minutes away from getting an away draw against Arsenal. It still doesn't look all right, as it should be, at Arsenal. I guess they'll get the Bayern tie out of the way, and you wouldn't think there'll be any way back for them then. But this one game, if you can pin it down to one game, the game at White Hart Lane against Tottenham really does look as important as any of them. And I think it's impossible to say, isn't it, really, how any of them are going to finish at the moment.
Are Tottenham in the least pressurised situation at the moment, considering everything surrounding Chelsea and Rafa Benitez and what happened with Wenger and the Champions League and all the kerfuffle that's been going on around Arsenal at the moment? It's almost like AVB's got his turmoil out of the way at the beginning of the season, and now Tottenham are just in a kind of a smooth sailing mode at this moment.
Yes, it is a little bit easier. I mean, he was under the same sort of pressure, as you say, but he's won a lot more friends at Tottenham with the way he's got the team playing, the fact that the players really genuinely appear to like him and his methods, and people like Bale are obviously so happy to play for him, and he's got them in the right role and working well. A lot of people felt he made one mistake when Adebayor went off to the African Cup of Nations and then Defoe got injured, which was almost, you know, it was almost fated to happen, wasn't it? And they were left without strikers at all, really. But they got over that, and they're in good form. They're playing well. They're playing the entertaining sort of football, especially at home, which Tottenham fans demand to see, and that's gone down as well. So, yes, I think we can say that the supporters are a lot happier than they were earlier in the season, possibly a lot happier than they were even with the appointment. They suddenly seem to have got someone other than Gareth Bale scoring again. Defoe is probably the one who they need to get back getting some more goals, in which case they should have a strong finish to the season.
Could be a very interesting finish indeed at the top and bottom of the Premier League table this season. Stephen, an absolute pleasure to have you on, mate. Sorry for taking up so much of your time today, but could listen to chat football all day long if we had the opportunity to. Thank you so much for taking time out and joining us, mate.
Pleasure as always.
Thank you very much. Steve Tung there of The Independent joining us here on World Football Daily, talking about the Premier League action this weekend. Arsenal getting that vital 3 points over Aston Villa down there at the Emirates Stadium this weekend. It wasn't the greatest Arsenal performance we've seen. Santi Cazorla, his 2 goals getting them out of a little bit of a hole. Villa, again, just wasteful in possession in the middle of the midfield a lot of the time during that game, but able to hit Arsenal on the breaks. Depressing for Arsenal fans watching that back four that used to be, you know, so solid way back in the day. You know, when you're looking at people like Adams, Keown, and although they weren't, you know, the biggest names in international football, it was a strong, sturdy Arsenal defence, Dixon, etc. But now it's Mertesacker's come in and not performed very well. Vermaelen is in a really shaky bit of form this season. Koscielny's not doing great. Carl Jenkinson had a good game on that right back position. And Monreal's good at getting forward, but still has left himself a little exposed on a couple of occasions. Hasn't been the ideal start for Monreal at Arsenal. But they just kept on backing off and backing off and backing off when Villas would run down the middle of the pitch. That's what led to Weimann's goal, of them just sitting off and sitting off and sitting off. And Weimann, what a hell of a strike, you have to say, to take the ball away from Szczesny with that little bit of swerve on it that beat Szczesny down to his bottom right side and gave Villa that, pulled it level with about half an hour to go. But Arsenal, 4 minutes from time, Santi Cazorla comes up after latching up with Nacho Monreal's cross across the face of the penalty area, and a wonderful finish from Cazorla to give Arsenal those 3 points. Tottenham taking on West Ham United this evening. How big a game is that down at Upton Park tonight? With Tottenham 1 point behind Chelsea, 1 point behind an automatic Champions League place. How much would Spurs love that after everything that Chelsea did to them last season, winning the Champions League and knocking them out of Europe's elite club competition? They'd love to get one over on the Chelsea boys, and maybe would even enjoy seeing Arsenal come up from and take the other Champions League position from Chelsea. It could well happen. Those three clubs very closely packed together indeed. Have Everton kissed goodbye though to Champions League football next season with their loss this weekend to Norwich City. We'll have a little bit of news on the charity campaign that Norwich were running on the weekend, an incredible amount of money raised by them through Twitter and of course through collections around the ground as well. Wigan though, down in the bottom of the table, we were talking about six pointers there, and Wigan beating Reading in a huge game for Roberto Martinez's side away from home. And when you look at these sides, their run-ins, they've all got to play big name opposition. Villa take on City next week, then they play Reading, then they play Rangers, then Liverpool, then Stoke away. Then you've maybe got a chance of getting some points against Fulham. But then you have to go to Old Trafford. Sunderland then go to Villa Park. Then Norwich away, which is going to be difficult. Then Chelsea, who smashed them, of course, 8-0 back in January. And then Wigan on the last day of the season. A huge game. That could be that Wigan-Aston Villa game if those two are still battling out for the final safe spot in the Premier League. Rangers, they look lost. They look completely done and dusted. Their Premier League days are surely numbered now. Southampton away, they take on, then Sunderland, then they have Villa away, then Fulham away, then Wigan at home, then Everton away, then Stoke at home, then Reading away, then Arsenal at home, then Newcastle at home and Liverpool. Those last three games, not very nice indeed, especially as Newcastle firing on all cylinders. And Papi Cisse's goal this weekend. Oh, I hate to do a kind of a Big Mama's House, but that was one hell of a strike from Papi Cisse. Wigan, of course, have already mentioned some of the games they're involved in. They've still got to play Manchester City, still in the FA Cup as well. Still have to play Newcastle at home. Norwich at home, there's points to be had there. Swansea at home could be difficult for them. West Ham away, again, it's a stumbling block. Tottenham at home will be hard. West Brom away should be, they could get some points in that one. Arsenal away, and then Villa at home for Wigan going into the final games of the season. And Reading with their run in. Look, Everton away, difficult. Reading Villa, six pointer. United away, difficult. Arsenal away, difficult. Southampton at home, chance for Southampton to pull themselves away from that relegation battle once and for all. Liverpool at home, difficult. Norwich away, difficult. Reading and QPR, six pointer. Fulham away, difficult. City at home, difficult. Maybe if they're still in it on the final day of the season against West Ham, there's a chance there. But other than that, it's all looking very tough indeed for these sides. You wonder who's got the most difficult schedule going into the final days of the season. It's very close indeed. I don't think Villa are going to get out of this one. I think Wigan have got that edge about them that they can pull something out of the bag. They do it time and time again at this point in the season. They pull out some of those shock results that we're not expecting. Whereas Villa is a side looking deflated. When they conceded that late goal from Santi Cazorla this weekend, they looked absolutely done and dusted. And we were chatting with Andrea Weimann after the game, and just listen to the tone of his voice. He sounds so miserable by it. Here's what he had to say after that Arsenal loss.
I mean, obviously we're disappointed we didn't get anything in the end, but switched off for 1 second in the last 5 minutes, and that cost us the game. We looked, every time we went forward, we looked like we were going to create something. And of course, we have to take the confidence from this now for the last games, and we were confident, yeah, at the moment. We're all together, we're all confident we get out of this, and we're confident we get a few more wins in.
Yeah, of course it's never nice to concede at the end, but like I say, we have to take belief from the performance, how we played today. And we switched off for 1 second. It was me for letting the left back in behind me switched off, but that just shows you can switch off. But obviously we're confident that we'll turn it around.
I don't know, I think they had loads of the ball, but we defended brilliantly and we all stuck together and they didn't really create much, I thought. And obviously on the counter attack, we got that done really well.
Yeah, Andreas Weimann there chatting to us after the game down at the Emirates.
We know you love that free bit from us here at WFD. Now go and sign up and get access to a huge archive of our content and interviews, and download the best daily podcast in America. Go to worldfootballdaily.com and become a member today.